And now we'll head back, 150 years or so to around 1860 here in California. We're joined by T.J. Meekins. Hi, T.J.
Good morning, Steve.
And Richard Hurley.
Hi, Steve.
And they're the authors of the new historical novel set in Nevada County in 1860. It's called Queen of the Northern Mines, and they're going to present a free multimedia show, California and the Civil War, that's coming this Saturday afternoon between 2 and 4 p.m. over at Tome's Sierra Mountain Coffee Roasters on Maltman Drive in Grass Valley. Now, why present a factual show, multimedia show, when you're doing you're promoting a novel that's fiction?
Well, they're so linked. A historical novel takes a lot of research. You start writing, and then you realize that every little detail needs to be checked. It's a world that's vanished now. As we did more and more research for this book, we found out more and more interesting things. And one thing we found out was that California nearly seceded from the Union.
Yeah, you were playing the state anthem there to lead us in. We were a Southern handmaiden for the decade before 1860. We had a Southern senator. We had two Southern senators at one point. We had a governor who wanted to peel off and join Oregon and have a Republic of the Pacific. And all these things swirl throughout the book. And rather than give away our plot by talking about the book, we figure, well, let's give the plot behind the book.
Interesting, interesting. Now, I understand that Nevada City and Grass Valley, these two little towns, had quite the rivalry going during the Civil War.
That's right. Nevada City was solidly on the side of the Union, thanks to the efforts of people like Aaron Augustus Sargent, who was our representative in Congress at the time. And Grass Valley was very strongly secessionist. The Allison Ranch mine was one of the most fabulous quartz lodes of the age, and it was owned by Irishmen. They were solidly in the southern camp, and they employed a lot of their countrymen there, Allison Ranch, and it was a notorious secessionist hangout. And there was a tavern down there called Ahern's Saloon, where there was all kinds of mayhem and murders committed in Ahern's by secessionist partisans.
And there was, I believe you told me there was a rumored attack that Nevada City got was all frightened about.
It was called the Big Scare, and it's written up in the history books. It was the night that Nevada City thought Grass Valley was going to attack them.
They're going to settle some old scores right then and there.
They sent the women and children to Sugarloaf, and they armed the courthouse for a siege, and they all circled it with a cordon of the home guard there. Actually, it was the Nevada Rifles, the local militia unit that had been commissioned as regular army by that time.
The only person who could get through was the bartender from Blaze's. He'd forgotten the password to get you through the lines, but he declared he had cocktails and was waved through.
And does Rough and Ready play into this at all?
Well, Rough and Ready seceded from the Union way back in the mid-50s, but they were an early act. Actually, the whole Civil War could have started 5 years before that, when California was admitted to the Union, because California asking for statehood upset the very delicate balance in Washington with the slave and free states. And the shooting nearly started then. It was kind of amazing that it got put off for another 10 years.
Actually, Rough and Ready does appear in the story of 1861, though, because their treasurer disappeared with the funds. He was going to keep it on behalf of the Confederacy until the the rebel state of California could call on his services.
What happened to cause California not to join the Confederacy or secede?
There were two different things. One was a split in the Democratic Party, and the Democrats split on the issue of slavery versus free soil. It was the Douglas Democrats and the Breckinridge faction. Well, the heads of these two parties actually challenged each other to a duel. And our Chief Justice of the California Supreme Court shot and killed David Broderick, our U.S. Senator, over slavery and free soil issues, and it turned the stomach of the California voters.
Yeah, you begin to have a reaction at that point. The state had been solidly Democratic, but when you have the Chief Justice shooting the senator, some people thought that was beginning to approach the edge of acceptable political behavior.
Now I'm going to look out at the radio audience. I want everyone that knew that the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court had shot a U.S. senator, I want you all to raise your hands out there.
That was
I'm not seeing very many hands raised.
Talk about Star King, Richard, because that's what really cemented California for the Union.
Yeah, very charismatic preacher from New England. Very, very tiny guy. He always disappointed people who had heard about the great Star King. You know, they'd go to hear him speak, and you could barely see over the platform. But then he'd open his mouth, and he apparently had this magical voice that could... We've got pictures of him filling squares in San Francisco with amazed listeners. And the best thing about the guy was that he was really funny. he could coax people who detested his politics into laughing, and he could make the people who were really committed to the Southern cause stop for a moment and say, you know, do we really want to go there in terms of having a war in California? But the guy who deserves, I think, the most credit for keeping the war out of California ended up being a Southern general. His name was Albert Sidney Johnston, and he was in charge of the U.S. Army Department of the Pacific. And everybody in California thought that he had been sent there by the treasonous Buchanan administration to make sure the state went south. This belief was held by a lot of secret Southern organizations in the state, and they went to him right at the beginning of the war and said, how about it, General, will you hand over the fortifications in Alcatraz and the arms for 75,000 men you're sitting on? And he heard what they were up to, and he told them as they came in the room that he was going to defend the property of the United States to the last drop of blood in his body. He had what people really cherished back then, which was a sense of personal honor. Then he handed over the command to a federal general who was sent out in a big hurry. As soon as the war started, the Lincoln administration didn't want to have a Southerner in charge of California. And then Sidney Johnston heads down south to Los Angeles, joins a secessionist militia unit as a private, and they were real enthusiasts, so they headed out 800 miles across the southwest through the Chiricahua Apaches, who were in a very bad mood at the time, and ends up in Texas, and they'll go fight for the South.
Hmm. And yet he... So you would credit him with saving California?
He avoided...
Absolutely.
If Sidney Johnston had handed over those defenses of California to the South, then there would have been warfare in California on the order of Lawrence, Kansas.
Yeah, it would have been a Missouri-style butchery.
Mm.
It would have been neighbor against neighbor, and he warned people about it. People would come to him for advice and say, what should I do, General Johnston? And he said, if you want to get involved in this war, go home and fight. Go back east and fight.
Yeah, here there should be peace, is what he said.
Now, what made we're speaking with Richard Hurley and T.J. Meekins about their new book, Queen of the Northern Mines, and they're going to be doing a presentation about California and the Civil War, and they're probably tipping you off right now to some of the stuff they're going to be talking about on Saturday afternoon between 2 and 4 over at Tomes and Sierra Mountain Coffee Roasters in Grass Valley. What made you two get interested in this topic?
Remember, it was 3 years ago when the county was so smoky that you could hardly breathe. Do you remember those days?
Oh,
summer?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And we refugeed to Marshallville.
Summer. I remember summer. We had one time.
It was the July of that year. We couldn't breathe. We went to Markleyville, and I took along a book by one of my favorite artists, William Sechrist. He puts out books about California history, and he goes through the old newspaper archives and fishes out these wonderful tales. And he had written a book about stagecoach robbers. I'm reading Sechrist. Here's a stagecoach robber who holds up a bullion shipment from the Comstock Lode down by Placerville, the famous Bullion Bend robbery. And they take these coaches that have been traveling all night from Virginia City, and the robbers stop them by Bullion Bend. And they take $40,000 worth of Comstock silver, and the robbers give them a receipt from the Confederate States of America for the load that they took, because they want the money to outfit a partisan rangers and ride back to the South and fight for Jeff Davis.
I about put the book down at that point, because denial is pretty fashionable among stagecoach robbers, you know, and I thought, well, here's a story to cover some misbehavior. And then we started researching it, and it turned out he was exactly who he said he was. He'd fought with Quantrell in Missouri. He'd helped burn the town of Lawrence and shoot all the men in it. He was a hard case, and he had a band of partisan rangers in the Santa Cruz Mountains who also wanted to go south. They wanted to march the same route Johnston did, but they needed some traveling money, and you know, that's what led them to the stage up in Placer County.
Now, maybe you could just sort of give us an idea a little bit about the novel itself.
Well, we set it in Nevada City because Nevada City is really the heart of the Northern Mines, and the gold from the Northern Mines were super important to the Union War effort. It was back in the Northern Credit.
Mm-hmm.
And just like the Bullion Bend robbery, there were a lot of efforts on the part of the South to appropriate the treasure shipments that came out of Nevada County. And Nevada County was also sort of the heart of the culture collision that was California at the time. The world had rushed in 49, and your neighbors in Nevada City were from all over the globe. You had the indigenous people. You had the Chinese. There were Europeans of all varieties and lots of Americans from the North and the South. And no one was getting along very well. It was quite a situation.
Yeah. Yeah, there was a lot of language study involved in the book, which appealed to both of us. Terry got to learn Maidu, and I got to finally go into German. If you're a culture junkie, and you love to see what happens when you put a lot of them together, Nevada City was the place to be in 1860. Everybody had come there as an adult. They came, with their cultures fully formed, and then they had to figure out how to deal with a whole group of other people who were in the same condition.
Interesting. Well, the place to be this coming Saturday, Tomes and the Sierra Mountain Coffee Roasters, we've just touched the tip of the iceberg, I suspect, about the history of this Civil War in California, how California almost divided in two. And I want to thank you both for stopping by this morning and telling us all about it.
Thanks for having us, Steve.
Thank you, Steve. It's fun.
T.J. Meekins and Richard Hurley. The name of the book, once again, is The Queen of the Northern Mines, a historical novel set in Nevada County back in 1860. Going to be an interesting session, I suspect.
We've got a lot of pretty pictures. Terry's done some excellent research.
Yeah, we're showing me some of them, and I'm going, whoa, that's stuff that a lot of our listeners have never heard a thing about.
There's so much written about the gold rush. There's so much about the railroad, but in between, we're plowing some new territory here.
All right. Well, thanks very much for joining us here this morning.